Asian Pop Nation on Sin 90.7.
Welcome to Asian Pop Nation, Sin's flagship show for Asian music and pop culture. We open the show today with two beautiful tracks from Japanese artists, As a Human by the iconic Sheena Ringo and Heal by M.I.Z. My name is Tracy, I'm the executive producer of the show this year, and tonight I'll be joined by Annabella, Leisha, Jesse and Xenia. We're going to be starting off the show tonight with a couple of anime news segments. First up, talking about the beloved series Yuri on Ice and the cancellation of its long-awaited movie sequel. After that is a fun story from Malaysia, where government authorities are currently planning to erect a real-life memorial shrine to the death of a fictional anime character. And after that, we'll be spending the rest of the show doing a deep dive into a new Asian-Australian series produced by ABC. It's a really interesting new comedy show called White Fever, which follows a Korean-Australian woman played by Ra Chapman as she attempts to figure out her love life and her identity as a Korean adoptee. The show has some really good surreal comedy moments and is also willing to ask some difficult questions, so we actually had a lot to say about it. And another fun thing about the show is that it is filmed in Melbourne, which is very cool. But yeah, folks, that's the show we've got in store for you all tonight. Right now, we're going to hit you with some more songs. The next one coming up is Sugar Bomb by Mi'ai.
Hey, you're listening to Asian Pop Nation on Sin, the go-to show for all things Asian. We hit you hard with a song by Produce 101 Japan's latest girl group, Mi'ai, with their song Sugar Bomb, continuing on with the ride with Roller Coaster by Syrup, Sumin, and Ago, and then ghosting you with Iman Fandi's Leave You on Red, because you know what else has left us with a lot of questions and very little answers? The Yuri on Ice film that will never be. But let's leave it to the team to give us their theories as to why the film was left to melt.
As another season of anime wraps up for all you anime fans out there, we of course have to say goodbye to the ones from the last season. And speaking of goodbyes, we recently had to say goodbye to a much beloved show. Now, I say goodbye, but more like this sequel never came to exist because they announced that they cancelled it. And of course, I am talking about the Yuri on Ice movie sequel, Ice Adolescence. MAPPA recently put out, I think, a tweet announcing that it was going to be cancelled after 8 years of waiting and delays. And the fans were not happy, to say the least.
Oh my gosh. I guess we should start first on, like, what the hell is Yuri on Ice, like, in the first place? What is the show, before we get into what it has done to the industry back in 2016 and why people have such like a clutch on it till this day?
So Yuri on Ice is basically this anime about ice skating. And it's about this figure skater named Yuri, who has recently hit a bit of a roadblock with his ice skating and he's finding it hard to compete, that kind of thing. One day, Victor, who is one of like the big award-winning figure skaters,
he's like a five-time world champion in this fictional universe that Yuri on Ice is in, very big leagues.
And then he decides to come and be his coach, and the story unfolds.
I think it's been classified as like a sports anime, so in like the haiku sort of realm. But I feel like when it came out, and if you're watching it during 2016 and stuff, the themes and everything about it feel like it was transcending beyond the quote-unquote typical sports genre, at least to me. It had like a lot of focus on the characters, and particularly Yuri, the protagonist that you mentioned, he has like a lot of undiagnosed anxiety symptoms when it comes to figure skating. That he's like really having to work through along with his coach slash eventual lover, Victor. And yeah, it is kind of deep, if you could say, for sports anime.
Yeah, it really like went into some of like the, like, for example, Yuri, he ran into like a lot of like mental roadblocks as well as like physical and that kind of thing that comes with like figure skating. And that's not often addressed in like sports anime in a realistic way, I guess. Like he has issues with like feeling capable of doing, like he lacks the confidence. And the process of like watching him like work through it with his coach Victor, who eventually love interest, but yeah, but when this show was released in 2016, it was big,
like massive. Yeah,
I think impact. Like it was like the highest grossing MAPPA ever had in a week, and it still is, even with like shows like JJK coming out afterwards and everything like that. It still maintains the record for like the highest grossing in a week. I don't remember what the specific stats were, but it was something like that. So it was big.
I mean, it was like really big. And I remember at the time as well, I kept hearing that damn theme song, like History Maker, played like over and over again. If I'm just on YouTube being like, oh, let me watch some anime openings. I was that kid back then that loved to have my playlist be just anime music. And all I hear is like History Maker top 10 anime openings of all time. It's pretty good. It takes me back when I like listen back to it now. And I would say especially a lot of people really liked Yuri on Ice, not just because of like its portrayal of a queer romance, and of course representing, I don't know, a sport that I don't think gets a lot of light in fictional media world. But I think a lot of people also really liked the ice skating animation. Like, this is 2016, so them like doing the
it was good, it was smooth.
2016, very smooth, because they will do like, you will watch a bunch of characters. There's this show has a massive supporting cast that till this day I cannot remember like all of them, but you would see like almost every supporting cast have their own routine at some point in that series, and the animation for each ice skating routine, it is like, oh, top-notch stuff that I don't think other sports animes at the time were giving that level of detail just to watch like an ice skating routine. I think it got a lot of people really into ice skating in like real world context. And I think a lot of even real world like Olympians, Olympic champions in ice skating were yapping online when Yuri on Ice was airing about how much they liked Yuri on Ice as well. So I think it just had like everybody, like Jesse said, was eating this up. People loved this for so many different reasons. And it was just such a fan favorite. And it was an anime-only show as well. So there's no, like, manga to fall back on if you wanted more content. So that's why a lot of people, when the show ended, were like, we want more.
Give us more.
Give us a season 2, blah, blah, blah. And then I think, like, it was, like, what, a year after the series came out, they announced that, oh, we're actually going to do a movie. So this is 2017 now. They're like, we are going to actually do a movie called Ice Adolescence. And the movie is supposed to be a prequel to Victor, aka the coach, how he got up to the ice skating thing. Right, Jesse?
Yeah. And, like, when it was released, people were hyped, because like in the original series there wasn't too much about how Victor came to be at the position he is.
Yeah, very mysterious guy.
Like, people were really curious.
Mm-hmm.
And so they subsequently started releasing like small trailers throughout the years.
Oh my god.
And then we got to the pandemic, and then it was kind of like delayed indefinitely, and there was never really a release date set. And then it came to 2024.
Today,
yep. A lot of the fans say that like Yuri on Ice was like kind of MAPPA's like big break into like, the animation world. I'm not sure how true it is, but MAPPA has gone on to produce other shows like JJK, Chainsaw Man, Banana Fish, Attack on Titan, the final season. There were shows that were very well known for like being cinematically very, very good and with very, very good animation. And like a lot of people were like, oh my god, you didn't like respect the show that put you on the map in the first place. You just canceled it. The audacity to just cancel it. After like 8 years of like leaving people, like being like, oh, is this gonna happen? It's not gonna happen.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. It's like, in a way, I think even though most fans were semi-aware that, okay, this film was probably not going to happen because it's been like 8+ years of radio silence up until today. But it's like kind of sad the moment it's like actually officially said, because it's like, oh, wow, there's actually, that's it. No more Yuri on Ice.
There's no Delulu that can save this.
Yeah, literally. Like, it's over. That's it. Yuri on Ice. Again, there's no manga to fall back on. They have no plans for any prequel, sequel, da-da-da. This is it.
Oh, this is it.
It's like past this point now, Euronics is just like a figment of people's imagination.
It's just a part of history now.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, it's sad because I remember how big it was, and now it's like there's nothing else that's gonna. And I am still in denial, honestly.
Oh my god! Oh, girl's going through it.
But the thing is, it's like because it's an anime only show, you can't really like read or watch. Well, read mostly. Something to like help cope with like this empty void. You can't do that. You just have to cope. And that's that.
Time to take a bow, Yuri on Ice, with a song by the Japanese group Tokyo Shoki Shodo called Untitled. Too soon? Too soon. But speaking of too soon, we've got to talk about how Malaysians are dealing with a particular loss in the fictional anime world. So if you want to find out who it is, better stay tuned to Asian Pop Nation. What time is it? Well, it's Asian Pop Nation time here on Sin. You want Asian pop music? We got it here with Tokyo Shoki Shodo's Untitled, Shia Shia's Nile, and Chemtrails by Tiffy. But we've also got a dose of Asian culture with some anime news over in Malaysia. But let's leave it to the team of Jesse, Leisha, and Tracy to give us the updates.
I guess speaking of tragedy and pain in the anime world, it's time for me to potentially open up another wound that I think certain fans of a certain show that Jesse and I have name dropped here and there don't want to reopen. Especially me. I'm the fan of this show. We're going to be talking about Jujutsu Kaisen. Yes, the child that MAPPA loves a lot and threw Yuri on Ice away for. It just felt appropriate, right? To just talk about MAPPA's ex-project now to MAPPA's new baby. And the reason why we're talking about Jujutsu Kaisen is because of this very, to me, it's funny, this situation that has started to unfold, and it's got to do with my motherland, good old Malaysia. Oh boy. Spoiler alert, by the way.
Huge spoiler alert.
Yeah, huge, massive spoiler. If you've never watched Jujutsu Kaisen and you want to, stay away right now. Just like, put this on mute, whatever. I don't know. Do what you have to do, because we're going to talk about major character death. But basically, for some of you who may have been aware, back in Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2, this was airing back in late last year, this character named Nanami Kento, very well loved, one of my favorite characters. I totally don't have a figurine of him just staring in my desk right now as I'm talking to you guys. He died. Oh, he's dead. He's dead. This is, I know, and you're like, Leisha, why are we rehashing old wounds? Why are we going back to this pain? Because
that's not what we want to hear.
Because of this thing, basically, if some of y'all remember this scene where Nanami Kento died, as his final, like, death parting moments, he was having this sort of, like, reflection scene of his mind of, like, oh, this is what I wish I could have done if I was, I guess, away from the Jujutsu world, if I retire. And his, like, one of his last, I guess, like, words you see as an audience is him being like, I wanted basically to retire in Malaysia. And it's like, ooh, Kuantan would be nice, which is this city in the state. It's just like such a random name drop. It's like somebody saying, I don't know, it's like watching an anime and somebody's like, oh, I would love to go to the Yarra River in Melbourne and just watch the ducks roll by. Just has that random niche reference to it. But yeah, we're talking about that scene particularly because the Malaysian government has been very adamant in their plan of legitimately doing a memorial for Nanami Kento in Kuantan, Malaysia, because of this man's final words.
The impact.
MAPPA impact. The way we jump from, ooh, here's MAPPA's impact in like ice skating world. Now here's MAPPA's impact for tourism in a Southeast Asian country. Yeah, this is, Jeffy, this is bonkers to me. And I'm the Nanami Kento like enthusiast here. Even this is like, oh my God. Basically, they've had plans to build this memorial site when the episode had dropped. So back in December, I remember there were all these reports coming out in Malaysia being like, the Pahang state government were like, oh yeah, like we totally are down to do a memorial. We just got to talk with the creators and all stuff, copyright stuff. And it was like, cool. They're probably just saying this and nothing is going to happen. Like that was in my head.
That's usually how it goes.
It goes like they just forget about this. Like politicians don't believe everything they say, guys. But as of like this month, April, they have come back to their words. The state government has been making these statements this month, being like, oh no, guys, we are committed. And I'm like, this is April 2024. This man already had died last year in this anime. But they are still committed to build a memorial site on a beach in Kwantan, exactly how it was referenced in Jujutsu Kaisen. And I am just shocked. They're like, don't worry, guys, we're still working on it. We just have to liaison with the creator. We have like a middleman. Like they are pulling all the stops for this fictional memorial for an anime character. And Jesse, I just have to ask, is there any sort of fictional character, maybe even just like anime character, that their death, like you would have loved to see a real life memorial for? A death that impacted you so much that you're like, damn, I wish I could just rock up to their memorial and honor them. Because this is insane to me. I love Nanami. Girl, I could not be flying back to Malaysia just to go to Kwantan for this.
See, me neither, because I don't think I can immediately think of a specific character death that I would be like, oh my god, I would totally visit the memorial. But the fact that they're so serious about getting this to happen, whether or not it happens or not, we still don't know. Yeah, but yeah, the fact that they're willing to go that far for a fictional character. But then also it's like tourism for like anime characters or like things that have appeared in anime is not like a new thing. I just think it's pretty surprising that they're going out of their way to like create something rather than it already being there, because most of the time it's just like, yeah, it's already there.
Yeah, no, it's stuff that's already existed. You're so right. I'm thinking like the anime Your Name.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking as well. Yeah,
everyone goes to like the stairs or whatever and they're like, oh look, it's me and my partner reenacting the exact moment where they're standing on the stairs. You're so right, and those places have like pre-existed already. They just like take inspo. I did see with this one, like when the anime had originally came out and people were like, oh my god, Nanami is dead. Some Malaysian fans had like put on Google Map, like pinpointed just a random beach in Kwantan and went, boom, this is the official location.
That's where he wants to go.
This is where he wanted to go. And I thought, I was like, okay, this is peak. This is it. But actually making, like you said, making a real memorial for it, like what hell is even gonna be in there? Like,
I can't imagine it. Like, what do you put into a memorial for a fictional character so it doesn't seem out of place? Like, for example, memorials are usually like serious kind of things, right? Imagine if you had a memorial and you just plastered a drawing of like Nanami on it. It looks so weird.
Yeah, on a beach. Like his dying words are like, oh yeah, relaxing on a beach in Kwantan, Malaysia. How are they gonna do a funeral memorial in a beach, like a nice relaxing?
I'm assuming people visit that beach because, like, if they're going to put a memorial there, people obviously visit it. It's just a bit, I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know.
I will be stunned if it actually happens. As a Malaysian girly myself, the government says stuff, but I don't know how well plans go through. But I will be so damn curious to see how it will physically look if it ever happens. It's so crazy. I'm like, what the hell? Oh, so why the hell did Gaga, Mr. JJK creator himself, even mention Kwantan in the first place? That's my question of the day. This is like the most random, like, to
me. He just picked a place on the map, threw a pin at it, and it was like, yep, there we go.
Exactly. I've been like trying to source out my own time of just like, what even made him think, yes, Kwantan in Malaysia, this is the one, chief. I'm gonna reference this in my manga. Where did this come from? It's like, to me, it's like an anime writer being like, ah, yes, my character before they died really wanted to go on the Great Ocean Road and see the 12 apostles, and that was their dying wish. Like, I don't know what to say.
Is this particular beach like famous even within Malaysia?
I mean, I would say like, from my limited knowledge, I would say like Kwantan is, that city is just known to have nice beaches, but there's no particular beach name that is like iconic or something like that. And it's not on the top of my head of like, oh, I want to go to a beach to Malaysia. Let me go all the way to Kuantan. Like, that's not, that just isn't on the everyday thing. And if I ask my family members, I don't think that's also going to be on the top of their head. So it really is like, he Google searched nice beaches in Asia and looked at a photo and went, this is nice. And then saw at the bottom, it said Kuantan, Malaysia, and went, this is the one, chief. I want it. Like, that's how I felt like what Gaga did. I don't know. It's just so random to me. But hey, if it gets Malaysia, people yapping about Malaysia, my motherland, I guess it's a win-win. But yeah, let us know, listeners, what y'all think about making a real life memorial for a fictional character. And if you have your own characters that you deeply care a lot for that you would do a real life memorial for, let us know on our socials at Asian Pop Nation.
Nanami and your beautiful face will be forever missed, which is why we're going to play from Asako Toki's 20th anniversary album, Utsukushii Kao, or Beautiful Face in English. But you better keep your beautiful ears tuned in here on Asian Pop Nation. What? Where are we? Did you guess Sin's Asian music and pop culture show, Asian Pop Nation? Gosh, you're good. Maybe it's because you heard Utsukushii Kao by Asako Toki with Rai-san. Or was it Tempale's Nahan? Or maybe it was that last song, Oh Cinderella by Eriko Hashimoto. Because there's a new show out with an Asian girl who has her own Cinderella moment in one way or another, which Bella, Leisha, and Tracy can't wait to spill the tea about.
Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually watched a non-reality show on ABC?
I had to watch a show for my media class, so it doesn't really count. Anyway, it was called Turn Up the Volume, but the last thing I actually probably watched was Bluey. Because they had the 28-minute episode.
Me too.
And I cried. Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah, no, probably also same for me would be Bluey because of that 28-minute special. But if we're not counting that, it would honestly have been when I had just come to Australia and I turn on the TV and they're playing like what Good Game Spawn Point or something like that show for the gamers. And I ate that up as a fellow gamer myself.
Wow, I can respect that.
Thank you. But yeah, Tracy, why do you ask such a question in the first place?
Well, I asked such a question just to, you know, to give the rest of the team and also the listeners a bit of context for what we expect of ABC scripted shows. Because right now we're going to be covering actually a new ABC show called White Fever that, contrary to its name, features an Asian woman as the main protagonist. Yeah, just personally, the only two shows I've pretty much ever watched on ABC were Fisk, which had Aaron Chen in it.
Oh.
And The Family Law by Benjamin Law, which was about a young gay boy in a Kanto family, which was ages ago. And so they were both comedies.
Yeah, I watched a couple episodes of that.
Yeah, that was like revolutionary in its time. But I have certain expectations for ABC shows. One is that they are always very short because we have no budget in Australia for film and TV. Episodes are very, very short, generally half an hour. What else? Because I guess they're limited by budget, they can hit maybe like a 6 or a 7 out of 10, but they're never like a 9 out of 10. So that's my expectation of Australian TV shows. Anyway, White Fever. Leisha and Annabella here have both completed all 6 episodes of White Fever. I myself have only watched 2.5 episodes. Leisha, would you mind giving like a little synopsis of what this show was about?
Okay. Oh my goodness. So basically this show, you're following this female protagonist. Her name is Jane. And the basic setup is that she basically kind of finds out via all her friends in her circle that she has a white men fetish. And basically the natural pipeline into that is that she is trying to quote unquote cure her white fever, hence the title, haha, genius. And yeah, but then the show quickly kind of dives deeper past that point into kind of her identity, because she is actually a Korean Australian adoptee. So she's been adopted at a very young age to a white family. So that kind of ties in along with, I guess, this dating history that she has, and everything kind of coincides together, clashes. And then that is the explosion of what this show is. It starts with just like her dating history being questioned, but then it becomes like her own internalized racism kind of being questioned and put in the forefront, and her exploration into that. That would be how I would summarize the 6-episode show. Yeah.
That's a really good summary, actually.
Oh, slay. Oh my gosh, hire me, ABC.
Fun thing to note about this series is that it was created and it stars Ra Chapman as the central character. She's a Korean-Australian adoptee as well. She basically is the main character. What did you know about this series before you going into it? Apparently you saw some promo for it, which is crazy because ABC promo reaching actual Gen Zers is crazy.
I don't know how it appeared for me. I think I was trying to watch the Bluey 28-minute special. And then if you want to watch it on the ABC streaming service, you get like ads for other shows and stuff that they have on the platform. And one of it was for the show. And I just like did a little Google thing. And then they have like an extra preview thing on their Instagram. Watched a bit of that. And I was like, what the hell is this show? It's my first initial like thoughts that came out in my head. The promo for it and the way they market it, it is very much focused on the comedy aspect. Like, it really is putting forward that this is like a quirky comedy show. Again, to me, the promo and everything looked very much of like, haha, look, Asian woman with a serious problem that she likes all these hairy white men and none of her Asian counterparts. Let's unpack that. And then that's kind of like it, including clips of like random quirky humor here and there. So I was going into it being like, oh God, like my opinions of comedy are, interesting.
Leisha hates comedy. She hates it.
I hate laughing. Funny jokes are not allowed.
Yeah, look, this show is very much like a raunchy sex comedy.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it features her having, like, bad sex or just, like, sex scenes which turn out to be comedic in some way. Like, there's a lot of that in this. But it's surprisingly thoughtful as well. It raises some interesting points. There's the sort of way she explores her adoptee identity and the way the main character slowly realizes that she's, like, completely divorced from her Korean roots was done in a good way, I think. I think there's like a few different threads if I were to summarize. So there's like the central character, and her main issues are like the sex thing and I guess her like identity. And then another thread would be like her parents. Her parents are like these two white people. Her dad is like lightly racist, and that means that she is like lightly racist as well. Her mum has this whole thing going on with her organ teacher. Apart from that, it seems like they're setting up a love interest between Chris Peng, this really hot Asian dude / childhood friend who she meets at a friend's wedding. And that seems to be like it might be a focus in the coming episodes. And I think those are the main threads. But in terms of like my opinion on the show so far, I think my favorite parts are the parts where it gets incredibly surreal. So at the end of episode 1, there is a random, she's like having this nightmare and she runs into Federation Square, and then suddenly out of nowhere, a troop of K-pop dancers spring out around her and start dancing to Next Level by aespa. It's just completely out of the blue. It feels like a nightmare. It's actually insane.
That scene literally like took me out. Like that was like the first time I was like, I need to pause this and like get out from my chair and walk in my living room and come back, because this was a moment that I was just not expecting out of nowhere. And these dance cover people, where did they find them to do?
Yeah, they look like an actual crew.
Yeah, they look like an actual crew. And I think they are like, not, I did like a little deep dive. They are like an actual Melbourne dance crew. Amazing. That they hired for this. So it is like insane. They were actually doing the Next Level choreo. Wow. But yeah, that scene was my first time being like, oh my God, this is absurd humor. But I was kind of living for it. Because like Tracy hinted at, this series is very much leaning on that raunchy sort of comedy, which is to each their own. comedy is subjective, but it's not my cup of tea personally. But when it gets into that like quirky, weird like thing, in a way, it's like she was getting jump scared by like her own heritage, basically. Like a group of younger Asian people who all clearly are very invested and into this part of Korean culture that she's like written, like kind of denounced like all forms of her Korean culture. So it was like, for her, that is like a jump scare horror thing. For a K-poppy fan, I was like, whoa, where the hell is Aespa Next Level just jumped out of nowhere? I mean, Annabella, what do you think about that?
I thought it was very funny. It was very interesting because I think she was part of the dance crew. Like, it was like her.
Oh, yeah, that's like, right. She had an evil doppelganger.
Like, oh, yeah. Evil yeah,
like her Korean K-pop version of herself. No, because I think there was that representation of like the Korean culture she may have lost. And then there was also in episode 4 where things get even more surreal. I'm not sure if this is spoilers, but she has this doll that has like blonde hair and blonde.
Oh my
like childhood goodness. Doll.
Her childhood doll. Okay, throughout this series, basically she has this box which it just contains all her like childhood things, and a lot of it is kind of things that she throughout the series you'll see her like push away because it's a lot to do with like she has a letter which is from one of her Korean parents. It's a lot to do with like her Korean heritage, and she's just like no. But in that box there's also this doll that her mom so her adopted mom like gifted to her. It was one of the first gifts she got, and it's like this cute blonde white doll, and this blonde white doll comes to life in like one of the episodes. Oh my goodness.
I can't tell if it's her or if it's like another person.
I think that is another actress.
It should be.
That is another actress. Anyway, but it was insane.
I didn't expect that episode to have just that doll like following her around. And being like, no, don't do this thing. Don't be Korean. Be white.
Yeah, crazy thing too. It's like, I actually like those scenes where it's something so like, it's tapping into quirky humor, but at the same time, you can tell that it is supposed to represent something that she's actively rejecting. I like those scenes. The doll, that was insane, but I loved it. But what I personally don't love as much in the humor aspect, especially because this show is marketing itself as a comedy, it's only fair to talk more on the comedy. It's, again, that sort of raunchy humor. But again, I'm also a Gen Zer who eats up like terrible internet humor. So I'm probably just not the demographic for that type. But I love when it gets into the quirky side. That's where I feel like that the series shines a lot in merging comedy plus telling the story that Ron Chapman is trying to tell.
There was like this line that like the doll says to her like as it's alive, and he's like, no, I'm doing this all, I just want to protect you, like don't show your Korean side, like using like whiteness as protection in like the Australian society. So I think that was the commentary on that worked quite well.
Damn, I think like future media studies kids are going to be assigned this series to watch and be like, what does this say about growing up Asian in a white society? Because you can tell that Ralph probably did some therapy before making this series.
Yeah.
He's thought very deeply about this, and then she's like represented it in like a sort of surreal way, which I think is very cool. Speaking of that surrealness, something I also wanted to talk about was that whole like that YouTuber who she watches.
Yes, this like
decolonize
YouTuber.
Your pussy.
Yeah, decolonize your libido. That quote stays in my mind forever now. Thank you, my savior. Yeah, it's like in the series, this is like a YouTuber, like she goes on fake Google, searches up like, do I have a type? And basically this is like her moment of like, oh great, yep, I have white fever. And then she ends up watching this video from this content creator lady who ends up becoming like a side character on her own as well, because she does end up meeting this person. But yeah, she meets like this YouTuber, and this YouTuber, she does like all these videos about decolonizing your libido, and it's all like
it's all insane, like green screen background talking directly into the camera, like insanity. It's wonderful. It's very internet humor. It's a very internet humor moment in an ABC series.
Yeah, exactly. Those are like some of my favorite parts. It was so fun. Like, it was just so fun to me. And just the absurdity of it. And again, her going up to the camera and being like, you need to vanquish the white demon from your vagina or something. Like some absurd thing like that. And I'll be like, oh my God. But I ate it up. Those sort of stuff. I really ate it up. But yeah, no, that character specific, it's interesting you mentioned, because in like the later episode, she does meet that person in real life. And then that person actually brings her to this community of other Korean adoptees who all live in this fictional Melbourne. it's so interesting to me that this is filmed in Melbourne. But anyways, she like meets all these adoptees. And even then in that scene, the character herself, Jane, she's like going through it. Like she's like, what? Girl's like physically shaking, being full of other like Korean people who are talking about their experience, whether they're like connecting with their birth family, yes, no. And then it's like additional, I don't know, the stuff they say, even though some of them were trying to be encouraging to her, it was also pressuring on her on like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I want to reconnect with my family. It was just like, whoa. Again, stuff like that, I was like you mentioned, Tracy, I felt like moments like that, I was like, whoa, it felt like a glimpse into maybe potentially what the creator herself has gone through before with like the whole find your birth parents and stuff like that. But also the interesting thing of her being so uncomfortable in a room full of Asian people, which for this character is probably like her first time. Here's the thing, her character, not only is she like adopted into a white family and all her present day friends are all white, when she was younger as well, she grew up in this like countryside town basically, and it was all white people as well. And there's only one Chinese restaurant, which is where Chris Pang's character and his mom work at, and they get along through there. But then there's this actually really well done scene that I quite like, in which Jane in her younger days, she's basically going through a thing that I think a lot of Asian kids go through in like growing in a Western society of trying to fit in to white people and all that stuff, because she basically contributes to the rest of the kids who are making fun of that restaurant, making fun of like Chris Pang's character's mom, saying all these racist comments about her, calling her dragon lady, da da da, and all that stuff. And the big part of the film is they literally throw eggs outside of that restaurant, including Jane herself. And then the mom sees it and is like, jaw drop moment. And that was like a thing that she actually had suppressed in her mind for so long that she didn't remember until like what, fourth episode in. And not gonna lie, that whole scene, like Annabelle, I don't know about you, but that whole scene actually, I was like, whoa, why is this is getting like deep. We're not in comedy.
That's angst. That's betrayal. Yeah. That's angst.
We're not in comedy realm anymore. And I felt like it started stretching into like, whoa, this is just not like I'm watching a very specific story about this one specific person and her adoption story. This is now like, whoa, I swear a lot of like Asian kids in general have gone through something similar of like trying to assimilate with your white peers to the point that you yourself are also making racist remarks of people who look like you, you reject. And that was crazy. But like, what do you think, Annabella, about stuff like that? It was wild to me, that scene.
Yeah, it sort of hurt, like the betrayal of like her childhood friend, like his reaction to it. Like, he was just there wanting to play, like, computer games with her or something.
That was true.
She's just throwing eggs at his mom's restaurant.
Restaurant, and saying all these race, like, contributing to all that sort of stuff.
Oh, I know. They were all sitting at a table eating dinner, and he's helping out at the restaurant, like, serving them food. And then they call him, like, I forgot what they called him.
I loved when that sort of thing was happening, the flashback happening, and then I think the scene right after was Jane in like adult time talking to one of her other like supporting character friends, and literally her like actually saying like, I guess verbally actually admitting her internalized racism of like, I hate Asians, I hate other Asians, I hate being around them. Wow. And I was like, wow,
that was
insane.
I think she said like, I feel unsafe around Asians.
Like, yeah. Sure
what she said.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the one that, again, got me the most was her flat out just being like, I hate Asians as, like, an Asian woman. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
But, and this is, like, scenes that I really like in the film. But then, like, oh, and then this is what irritates me a little bit about it. You get, like, stuff like that. And then 2 seconds later, a random Asian man walks past, she looks, and then we get a slow-mo shot of Espa Next Level again. But this time, Chris Pang is in the dance crew gyrating in front of my screen. And I am like, oh my god. Like, this is what killed me about this series. It's like, moments like that, I felt like, oh my god, we're getting somewhere. And then they, like, kill it by, they're like, don't forget, this is a funny haha show, so we gotta dial it back. And not even with a, in my opinion, my subjective comedy opinion, not a good way of rounding it up, you know? What do you think?
Yeah, it's like whiplash, right? Because it's doing something really, really well, and then it goes on to do something really, really badly, and you're like, why was that choice made?
Oh, it's just like stuff like that. And this is not the only occurrence, but I think this one was the one that actually got me a lot, because this was like towards the end of the series. And if you're in the end of the series, this is where you're kind of like starting to tie the little bows of all the plot lines, and you're getting to character growth resolution. So, you know, kind of want to take it a bit seriously. I don't know. And it comes to like, oh god, Chris Pang gyrating to Espa Next Level. Like, I cannot make that up. Even if I wanted to. Oh, I don't know. That's why I'm so conflicted about this. And I mean, I finished it because I was genuinely like, I was curious on how they're gonna round things off. And I think beneath all the humor that is not my cup of tea, there is genuinely a really nicely crafted story being told, very unique to the creator herself, but I think has a lot of factors. Even us as Asian people, who none of us have had like a adoption story experience, can relate to still. Like beneath all that, has this really nice story that I wanted to see it pan out, but it's like you have to like go and withstand all the others, like really raunchy comedy and her biting a white man's beard. Yeah, and Asian man slow-mo eating Korean fried chicken, like,
and the pizza scene,
it was
so weird.
I've never found sex so unappealing as when I watched this series. From what you're saying, Leisha, it sounds like it's willing to go places where, like, I would say, like, Asian American shows don't really dare to go. Like, an Asian character straight out, flat out admitting that she hates other Asian people. I think, genuinely, in the world, there are a lot of Asian, diasporic Asian kids who are, like, that, who genuinely, like, hate being around other Asian kids, who are really self-conscious about it. But people are not really willing to tackle that in, like, higher budget productions, because it's too touchy a subject. But it is real. And so it is cool that this comparatively lower budget Australian show can tackle those topics. It's just, it also has to be a bit bad as well, because it's Australian.
Oh, God.
The other thing I wanted to just talk about was the fact that this is, like, all filmed in Victoria.
Yeah, good old, this is over where we are. We're talking about local hits over here.
It feels so weird to be watching something which was filmed in places which you're really familiar with. There's this, like, weeaboo man who she has sex with a few times. This wall of air conditioners is used as the establishing shot for all those apartment scenes. And it's, like, a wall of conditioners that I, like, took a photo of the other day because I was walking past it. All the Chinatown scenes, I'm like, I can picture in my mind where exactly the camera crew was. And all the scenes shot in the fictional town of what's it called? Mount Whitehead, where her parents are from?
I think it was Mount Whiteman.
Oh, Mount Whiteman, yeah.
Like, white man, yeah.
It's so funny.
Oh my goodness.
It's so on the nose. But they filmed in Ballon in, like, West Victoria on the way to Wendouree. It's on the train line. But it was, like, Oh, it's cool to play GeoGuessr while watching a TV series. I think that helped me get through it because I was just like, where did they film this in Melbourne? Where did they film this? Just in the background. Or stuff was happening. I would be like typing up the names of shops in the background and being like, oh, they filmed it here. Wow, thank you, Screen Victoria, for producing this so I could do that.
Annabella, somebody who's like, you've seen the whole thing, what would you say is like your just general, like overall thoughts about the series as a whole from start to end? Was it worth the journey? I don't know.
As a whole, I felt like when we were coming up to the end, it didn't feel like the end. Like, I think it kept going with all its like surrealism, but also like just the pace of it. There were still things being brought up towards the end. And then, I don't know, I was thinking about it, but I kind of liked, this is spoilers for the ending, but she like doesn't end up with like the guy. Like, I feel like that's what we all expected. Like, she's going to have this happy love story with this Asian guy. But
oh,
no,
yeah, she doesn't
like
end up with Chris Pang.
In, like, the last five minutes.
Well, thank God, because they're childhood friends, and that would be weird if they got together.
No, they have like a little, like, are you Asian enough Olympics sort of fight, basically, between the two
like,
of them.
Are you just dating me so you can feel more Asian? And that was a big
and then blah blah blah, and she was like, yeah, maybe I wasn't a passport, I don't need blah 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 blah, and then yeah, again, they were having a bit like Asian Olympics moment, and then they broke it off, and then we never saw Chris Pang again.
So, it didn't pop up with Next Level one more
time. So Tracy, you are wrong to think that they were gonna have their little romance happily ever after by the end of it.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
But I get what you mean, though, about, like, how, I mean, this is a short series, and I think Tracy, again, touched upon about, like, her, like, how she mentioned most ABC series are kind of, like, very short, and this kind of follows that line as well, and I felt like by the end of it, yeah, there was still, like, a couple of things that we just, like, you'll never find out, like, her. She has this very close, like, childhood friend of hers that's not Chris Pang. It's, like, her female friend who got married to an Asian man. And they have a massive, like, falling out throughout the show. And kind of the friendship, I guess, is ended by the end of it. It's kind of fizzled out. There's no ending to it for it, per se. Yeah. And it kind of, like, by the end of it, it really dials back straight to, like, Jane and her adopted family and telling them, like, oh, I think I actually want to go to Korea and find out more about my birthplace and my birth family. And then that's kind of where it actually ends off at. So very interesting. So it's just interesting how, like, again, the beginning starts out with her being like, oh my God, I have a thing for white men. And then now it, like, the way it ends, it's her being like, I actually want to go to Korea and find my birth family. Thing. I like the juxtaposition of how it ended, but again, with it being like a short series as well, there's a lot of loose ends that are not tied up that it would have been cool to see, but also not entirely their fault because of funding, you know? So
They might do a series too. I think ABC does occasionally bring back their series, because it sounds like there's a lot of questions that still need answering. But yeah, that's White Fever. And from the sounds of it, I think we would definitely recommend it as, like, an interesting watch. Like, it's definitely unique. However, please be adult if you want to watch this, because it has a lot of sex scenes in it.
Mature themes. There is a sex doll. I repeat, there is a sex doll. That sex doll plotline, the fact that I have to call it a plot line because that is relevant for like a couple of episodes in the series is shocking to me.
Okay. Instead of doing the usual thing where we ask you how many sex dolls out of 10 you would rate her, let's just sum it up like this. How would you sum up your feelings towards the series in a sound?
Oh my God, a sound? Girl.
Yeah, because for me so far it would be, that's how I feel about the series. The two episodes I've watched so far.
Actually, that can probably be my sound.
Wonderful.
I can't think of a sound for me, so I guess I'll have to be really boring and give this a numeric value. Out of sex dolls, I know, so boring. I would say for this show, for me, again, the humor has to dock down a few points. I just think I'm not the target demographic. If you're more of a millennial, I think this would eat more. But I will say I do like the actual theme that it is trying to tell. It is pretty neat and not something I would say I've seen in, definitely not in Asian Australia media scope that we have here. I've never seen something like this be told before. So it's really cool. So I'll give it 7.5 out of 10 sex dolls. Thank you.
Amazing. So yeah, that's Asian Pop Nation's thoughts and feelings on White Fever, currently airing on ABC. That's the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining our Asian Pop Nation team tonight of Annabelle, Leisha, Jesse, Xenia, and myself, Tracy. Tonight we talked through some recent news surrounding the cancellation of a long-awaited Yuri on Ice sequel, as well as a real-life memorial being built in Malaysia to commemorate the death of an anime character. And finally, we went in-depth with our review of the fascinating and sometimes infuriating new ABC comedy series White Fever, which we actually would recommend very highly to anyone who's interested in sort of raunchy comedies. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Asian Pop Nation. We're going to end off the show with a couple slower songs, as is our custom. This first one is going to be Bored by Leve, and the next one after that will be Forever Last by Natasha Elvira and Ardito Mono.